You asked about Dorian Thompson-Robinson. He had said also that...
He called it malpractice.
Well, did he? Did he say that, or I asked? I asked that question of whether it was malpractice. I don't know. I don't remember if Jason said it.
I've been writing
a lot of things down lately. I'm not sure right off the top of my head.
I don't know how it could be anything other than that, what happened last week.
Well, there were people who yesterday were saying, well, Ken, like, it's his job to... Yeah, but it's their... They were saying it's Dorian Thompson-Robinson's job to have himself ready. I'm going, yeah, but they're coaches. You have to do what you can to get him ready if you do indeed plan on playing him. You can't just put him in that situation and he doesn't know. Here's Jason just moments ago about that.
Kevin looks totally broken this year. And this is a guy who just won Coach of the Year in January. And look at him now. And it, like, he's aged 25 years in 6 months. By the way, Dorian didn't find out Friday. It was later than Friday when he found out he was like...
Wait a second. What are you hearing?
You know, the players had a walkthrough Saturday at the stadium. When they go through their walkthrough, they do the short yardage package. And at the short yardage package, Deshaun came out to run the short yardage package. And players were looking around going, okay, well, this is new. Like, why are you out here? It was always Jameis is a short yardage quarterback. So he still didn't know as of Saturday. Like, I had kind of heard that throughout the week. They had told Dorian to be ready, but they didn't actually tell him he was going to be the backup until over the weekend.
So that's Jason. The wheels are coming off. They ain't shaky about anything. This is going back to old hat here. I'm remembering. The wheels are off. They're off. They're off.
They're like me out on I-90 hoping that somebody can come help them put the wheels back on.
This is old hat now. I've been through this before. You know where this goes. That disturbs me. Because I'm like, well, Jameis, if he comes in and he conducts the offense... And it looks like you're not going back to Joe Flacco land. I just don't believe that that's possible for lightning to strike twice. I don't know. He is a very motivating person. Maybe he can. Maybe Jameis can lead him. But you've already lost six games, so you're not going to the playoffs. And the only thing you would probably be doing is playing yourself out of maybe the number one or number two draft spot. And since New England's terrible... maybe they would not take a quarterback. I'm not sure. That's a different conversation for a different day. But for Jameis, maybe Jameis can help you win some games. But this is being said here. You brought up, was he forced to make this decision? How does a guy who wins Coach of the Year twice lose power?
Why did it take so
long?
How
does he lose power?
Why did it take so long for him to get extended? Why did he get extended at the exact same time as... His colleague, the guy that I'm not sure what the hierarchy is in that front office between him and the GM. Like, I think these are all questions I did ask in the offseason. They did surprise me, but we were basking in the glow of a playoff run to really dwell on it. But I did find it a little peculiar.
It's not making sense. And I know everybody, like, people bring up Bill Callahan, and I miss Bill Callahan too. But it's, remember, you were always going to lose Bill Callahan at some point. His son was going to be a head coach. It's a natural order of things. You can't hold him hostage. I still hold them accountable for who they've hired after. You have to find proper replacement. Like, if Gerard Mayo ends up being a mess in New England, well, it's not where you just let Bill Belichick go. I can understand at some point these things have to happen. Who did you replace him with? So who did you replace Bill Callahan with? Did you replace him with someone who knows what they're doing, or did you replace him with a guy who I don't know if he knows what he's doing or can get these guys going? Same thing with the running back situation. Same thing with the wide receiver situation. Same thing with a lot of situations on this coaching staff.
I won't crush them for...
I'm asking questions. I'm not crushing yet because I think we're starting to see...
The GM... No, the offensive line thing. I mean, you look at who's available. You go through a hiring process and you also utilize your network that you have. And I think overall in the Stefanski era, they've had some of the best coaching staffs that we've had in Cleveland in our lifetime. So I'm
then
not going to...
Why can't they get lined up right?
Oh, I think maybe they made a bad hire. I mean, they might have made a bad hire, but I'm not crushing them because their processes in the past have led to, I think, pretty fairly good hires.
Okay.
Right?
Historically, yes, but during that time, remember how much changeover did they have with the coaching staff? Was it significant every year? Because I think you brought up the question. You're going, how did they make the playoffs in 2020 and no one wants to hire these guys off this staff? Remember, you said that.
Yeah, you. I did wonder that, and I wondered if that maybe made the head coach look better because it's like he's responsible for this.
Maybe it did.
But now I heard, like, Nick yesterday was wondering, I don't think he alleged this, but he was wondering what Callahan being gone, if that made, he used the term fraud. I don't think he really meant Stefanski was a fraud, but I don't think just because you lose your offensive line coach, that means that shouldn't be the end of your team. Like, come on.
He was also an associate head coach.
Yeah, he was.
Right?
He was a definite.
He was the office next door.
Yeah,
where he you
was
bounce stuff
without a doubt.
Of.
Bill Callahan was a factor, and we did shows.
A lot of running game stuff was done through Bill Callahan.
And we did
I'll tell
shows
you right now.
We did shows, and I believe some people on this show did say that we were overestimating the importance of losing Bill Callahan. I was not one of those people. I definitely thought he would be missed.
I just knew you had to do it at some point.
Yeah.
Who do you replace him with? And what you've replaced him with so far isn't that great. And this goes to what you had last week where we talked about not starting. Because we had heard that there were some people before this injury with Deshaun Watson, and this is what kind of, you could tell this is what really irked Daryl on Monday, is that, you know, you're hearing some things where some of the guys aren't very big fans. And it's not, I don't think it's personal or anything. It's just the guy wasn't playing well. And so when you hear some of the defense that comes out, I think it rubs people the wrong way. Players are players. They see themselves there. So I wasn't surprised by that. But you and I had talked about, yeah, now there's leaks there. Well, Jason's saying that the players didn't know till afterwards, not on Friday, about Dorian Thompson. So what is that? What is the procedures? What is the plan here? Like, there are times you just have to do emergency things, and he has to go in there. But that is not a plan. Albert Breer spoke about it yesterday. I got to get this in here real quick because we have the two-second trivia coming up here. Albert Breer was asked, was Deshaun empowered too much by the contract?
I think Deshaun Watson came in here empowered by the contract and a little bit of a broken person. Obviously, like, what he was accused of is awful, and to what degree he's guilty of that, I don't think very many people know for sure. Regardless of what you think about that, I do think to some degree he was really messed up by everything. Like, he comes in, I think, messed up. I don't think he was in the right frame of mind to be the football player that he was before. Now, looking back on it in retrospect, I think one of the things that led him to having great success in Houston was how tough the coaches were on him there. And it was a tough love where they were able to establish respect with him and establish trust with him. And that's not what the Browns have done or have got. You know, I think in addition to maybe not having people who are as tough on him, and maybe because he is being seen as being a little more fragile, he's not making the progress he was when he was in Houston. And then you see like some other things they do, like not bringing Joe Flacco back and firing Alex Van Pelt. I mean, the message that's getting sent to him is, well, this isn't your fault. We're going to fix everything around you.
So real quick, it goes back to, did Alex Van Pelt say something that people were uncomfortable hearing?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised.
Why do we need to take away power from a coaching staff that we thought was pretty good, doing pretty good? Like, I'm questioning. Why do we need to take away power from a coaching staff we thought was pretty good and hand the power over to the guy who got hurt last year? Why? Why can't he help? Why can't he be helped?
I mean, maybe there was a difference of opinion. I mean, maybe the organization and whoever is making those decisions, I would have thought it was Andrew Berry. I know some people think it's Paulie D out there on the West Coast. Maybe they didn't like the way that the coach was operating. Maybe they thought it wasn't because of him that they had that success.
Man, as much as things change, they say the same.